Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us here on the Daily Program. Now, looking at this sort of relationship that's kind of formed between the two countries, how did we see this come about? Sort of odd bedfellows, it would seem.
Yes, that's the case. I think since President Trump has taken over, has become president of the US, geopolitics around the world has shifted. So for many decades, the US has really been a global leader when you're trying to deal with issues like trade or like climate change or energy policy. The US has played a leadership role. It's been the most powerful country in the world for some decades, really since the end of World War II. But what we've seen in recent months under President Trump is a slow withdrawal from a number of the US's commitments, or really an abdication of its leadership role globally. And so other countries now, I think, are really looking at how they might fill the vacuum. And Europe, at least in the area of climate change, for example, has been a leader for many years. But of course, we see the rising power now of China and India and Brazil and other nations. And I think there's a real, there's almost an inevitability that some of these countries may work or may form blocks with Europe to lead the world in the US's absence.
You know, I think obviously China, the rise of China has come to no surprise with anybody who's sort of got a passing interest in global politics. We are entering what some have referred to as the Asian century. And yet, this new alliance with Germany and Germany really stepping up to the bat to lead a lot of the conversation, I think that's come as a little bit more of a surprise. What does this actual alliance mean for diplomatic relations with other countries, with all the other sort of observers like us here in Australia?
Well, look, I think it's too early to call it a kind of formal alliance by any means. I think what we're seeing is just an indication that Brussels and Beijing are more willing to work together on these issues because the US simply has withdrawn on issues like climate, energy, like trade and so forth. So what does this mean for the future of the world? Well, it's a little early to say in practice. But we have seen, after the US walked away from the Paris Climate Agreement in June, we have seen Beijing and Brussels come to an agreement on some measures to accelerate action on climate change. We've seen Germany and Japan recently on a free trade agreement. So I think what we're seeing is a willingness for these countries to work together more in the US's absence. Whether this develops into some type of formal alliance, I think is too early to tell.
The words panda diplomacy have been thrown around a little bit. Could you tell us, panda diplomacy, what exactly does this mean? What is its significance?
Well, panda diplomacy is just a phrase, really, as far as I understand it, and I'm not an expert in this by any means, but is really when the People's Republic of China, you know, uses these very charming animals, these giant pandas, as diplomatic gifts to other countries to symbolise, you know, renewed diplomatic relations or to try and re-energise diplomatic relations on sensitive issues. So you might like to think of it, to some extent, Australia has often, it's often been talked about koala diplomacy. You remember when G20 leaders were hosted in Brisbane back in 2014 and there was pictures of Vladimir Putin and others holding koalas. Well, perhaps this is the Chinese variant, but it's been around for many decades. And I guess, yeah, panda diplomacy is something to China's have used to some good effect over a number of years.
Now, you mentioned Donald Trump pulling out of the Paris Accords. That's been obviously a very significant, significant showing of what Trump is likely to do to kind of upset a lot of the balance in terms of America taking that leading role. During his campaign, though, he did talk a lot about, in his own way, going back to the isolationist roots of, say, pre-World War II America. America was very isolationist prior to World War II, and, of course, we've seen a huge, huge turnaround in that kind of policy in the past kind of 50, 60 years. So looking at with America actually taking this step back, that's not all that likely to go all that smoothly. In fact, since Trump took power, he's been a little bit unpredictable. Syria sort of jumps to mind as a situation. He said they were going to be very, very isolationist and then ended up sort of landing a whole bunch of missiles on the country. So what do you think the reaction is likely to be from the United States, given how wary they are of China's rise as a new superpower?
I think it's a really important point. As you said on the campaign trail, Trump has basically played up this isolationist kind of approach. There's a number of issues at play here. There's kind of, one, trying to predict, you know, what is President Trump going to do on so many issues. He says one thing, and then a couple of weeks later, he tweets the complete opposite position, including, for example, recently on NATO. There's also within the U.S. government, there's the White House position, which is essentially set by President Trump and his close circle of advisors. But there's the rest of the U.S. bureaucracy, including the State Department, the equivalent of the Foreign Affairs Department, and other agencies that I think will try and, you know, advise Trump that an isolationist approach is not the way to go, and that the U.S. needs to continue to engage with the world. And I think we're seeing some of those battles play out across the U.S. government as different issues crop up. The Paris Climate Agreement was obviously one, where there was reports in newspapers that many of his close advisors argued that he shouldn't walk away, that America should remain engaged in some of the most important issues facing the globe. And I think this kind of battle between withdrawing and engaging with the world will play out across different policy domains in the coming years. It will also depend, of course, on the Republican Party itself, which on some issues is very much right behind President Trump, climate change being a prime example. But on other issues, such as trade, a number of prominent Republicans, don't support the approach of President Trump.
Mm. Well, Christian, thank you very much. Really appreciate your insight. Really appreciate you joining us this morning.
Thanks very much for having me.